Parshas Emor. We will be focusing on the Yontov of Shavuos and the time leading up to Shavuos, which is, of course, the Omer period, because these Yom Tovim, these times, are, of course, described, and halachas of these days are included in Parshas Emor. The discussion of the Omer period and leading up to Shavuos begins in Parshas Emor Perek Chaf Gimel in Pasuk Tes and Yud. And we need to read them because first I want to go through general laws about the Omer and about Shavuos, because today we just count the Omer. But back in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, it was a whole different situation. It was a very important time because it had to do with the harvest, and it had to do with when they can harvest their grain, which was standing in the field and ready to go, and when they can start using and eating the new wheat and all of the fruits and produce that they had been working on. And so they waited for this day of the giving of the Korban Omer to start. So, you know, it was like pushing the go button. So you have here, V'dabar Hashem el Moshe le'mar, dabar el b'nei Yisrael v'yamarta aleihem, ki savo el ha'aret asher ni nosein lachem, when you come to the land, u'katzartem es katzira, when you begin to harvest the crop, you have to, v'hevesem es ha'omer, you must bring the omer offering. It's a korban tzibur, it's not an individual offering, it's on behalf of the whole nation. You bring the Omer, Reishis Kitzirchem El HaKohen, the first of your harvest to the Kohen. Beheinif Es HaOmer Lefnei Hashem, and he waves this offering before God, Liritzonchem, on your behalf, so for your betterment. Mimacharas HaShabbos Yanifenu HaKohen, the day after Shabbos, is when the Kohen takes the Omer and waves it. Returning for a moment to last week's talk, the Tzedukim, who read the Pshat literally, remember, and felt, and their position was of the Tzedukim, that when Chazal come up with a halacha that seemingly contradicts the Pshat of the Torah, then that's illegitimate. There's no authority to do that, and so they rejected the idea that Mimacharas HaShabbos was the day after Pesach, and they insisted that it would be Sunday after Pesach. Now, the question is, why does the Torah say Mimacharas HaShabbos, the day after Shabbos? Why doesn't it just say the day after Pesach? Rav Hirsch answers a simple and exquisite answer. Rav Hirsch explains that they had planted. I'm not quite sure when the wheat and the five grains, when the planting season exactly began, but certainly it had begun. And the wheat was standing, not just wheat, the grains were standing in the field. Barley seems to be the first grain to ripen. And it was standing in the field. But there was a prohibition on harvesting and utilizing any of the grain until the Omer was brought. So in a sense, the earth itself was in a state of Shabbos, v'shavta ha'aretz, as we talk about Shemitah, the land rests. You cannot work from the land. You cannot force the land to produce. It's Shabbos ha'aretz, which is a common term. Whatsoever, we use that idea all the time. Hirsch says, the Shabbos, in referring to Mimacharas HaShabbos, is the Shabbos of the land. Because only on the day of cutting the Omer, okay, the after that day when Shabbos ends and we offer the Omer, then everybody is free to now harvest and cut and start working the fields and eating their new fruits and eating of the Shivaminim and eating everything that they're producing. So the Shabbos we're talking about is Shabbos Haaretz, which comes to an end with the offering of the Omer. So we offer the Omer, which releases everybody and allows everybody to begin eating. Now, there are halachas which are called Chadash and Yashan. Let's talk about them for a moment because they are appropriate. This is what this law is about. Any wheat standing in the field before the Korban Omer was given was considered Chadash, brand new, and was forbidden, untouchable, until the Omer was given. Rav Hirsch, who is always, when you come to these complicated areas that are very halachic, it's worth it to look into Hirsch because he gives you a synopsis of all the laws, makes it very clear. And he points out that this prohibition against harvesting the wheat that is standing and waiting for the Korban Omer to be brought, does not apply to fields that are artificially irrigated and does not apply to fields that are also artificially planted, that in a sense fields where wheat would not normally grow, for example, deep valleys and things like that, or the areas that are cultivated by man and not necessarily a natural habitat, you might say, for the wheat or the grains. So there are some fields that were exempt from harvesting before the Omer. But the general rule was most fields were not exempt from harvesting and utilizing before the Omer. And this wheat standing there ready to be cut and not yet allowed to be cut is called chadash. As soon as the Omer is offered, it's allowed to be eaten, and it's already called yasha. Now it's old. It's after Tzayin Nisan, the day after Pesach, after the Shabbos of the land ends. And now we can use it. Now, wheat planted a few months later, perhaps Sukkot time, or grains planted Sukkot time would also be in the category of chadash and would have to wait till the next year, till the Korban Omer to be harvested. So these laws apply in Eretz Yisrael whether there is or is not a Beis HaMikdash. When we don't have a Korban HaOmer to bring, so we Chodesh ends on Tzayin Nisan, the day after the first day of Pesach. There's a machlokas regarding its applicability in Chutz La'aretz. There's a big machlokas. It's a machlokas of Tanayim in the Gemara. Some hold that it is B'chol Moshvoseichem, as the Pasuk says, wherever you live. And some hold it does not apply in Chutz La'aretz. And there are many poskim that hold that it does not apply in Chutz La'aretz in these days. Some people are makbid on Yashan today also. You'll see it on the flower. But it is not a conclusive thing. There's strong opinions that are not makbid on Yashan today. In any case, this is the general structure of the law, and we bring the Omer, which comes from barley. Barley was the first grain to ripen. And that was the first to be brought, and we'll get back to the fact that the first offering was barley, which is not the grain of choice normally for bread and cake and our baking purposes. It's considered more of animal food, something that human beings would use only in the last case scenario if necessary for bread, whereas chita is certainly the first choice. So v'yasisem b'yom hanifchem es ha'omer keves tamim ben shenasol ola Hashem. You also offered an ola, a keves, and it's mincha, and other. Now the pasuk tells us the other offerings that went on the mizbeach along with the korban tzibor, the communal offering of the omer. And pasuk yudalid needs to be paid attention to because it tells us there v'loch lechem v'kali v'karmel. Lo sochlu ad etzem hayom hazeh. That word etzem is a critical word. We'll see it again. Keep note of it. We'll come back to it. Nothing can be eaten from these categories of food ad etzem hayom hazeh until the essence. What does etzem mean? Is will be our question. The etzem of this day, until you bring the korban, chukas olam ledoroseichem. This is forever, and here is where the machlokas lies. Bechol moshvoseichem, in all the places you dwell, which is where some hold it's also in America, and anywhere. So this is the story of the korban haomer, the etzem hayom hazeh. Until the korban is offered, everything is chadash. Nothing can be touched, even when there is no korban to offer, and there's no Beis HaMikdash, and there's no place to do the avodah. Still, be'etzem ayom hazeh til tezayin, everything is chadash. The day itself is significant, with or without the korban omer. Okay? Usfartem lachem imachras haShabbos, and now you start counting from the day after the Shabbos of the land, from the day that you've given the korban omer. You start counting 7 weeks, Sheva Shabbosos Tamimos Tiena, Ad Mimacharas HaShabbos HaShavias, until the last week, the end of the last 7 complete days. You count 50 days, and you bring Hikravta Mincha Chadosha LaShem, and this is a brand new offering. And the offering consists of not barley this time, but wheat. Pasuk Yudzayin Mimoshvosechem, from your places where you are settled, taviu lechem Tnufa Shtayim. So on Shavuos, Shavuos is characterized by the mitzvah of the day, which is that we bring Shtei HaLechem, two loaves of bread. And it is, if you look in the Pasuk, Shnei Esronim Solas Tiyena Chametz, it is baked as Chametz. And it is Bikurim, it is called Bikurim. The bread that is offered is called Bikurim. And Shavuos then initiates the Bikurim part of the year, the Bikurim offering part of the year, which would extend till Sukkot. People would bring from all over, and it was a great celebration. It was a family affair, and it was done with all kinds of frills and pomp and ceremony. People would decorate their baskets and their oxen and whatever animals they're traveling through. Shalayim would all be decorated, and they'd come accompanied with music. Whole cities would travel together. It was a huge affair, a big summer event, I guess. Everybody would come to Yerushalayim with their bikurim and offer them through this time period. And Shavuos, by the Shtei HaLechem, initiate this whole time period. By the way, the only time Chametz was brought on the Mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdash was here, on Shavuos, with Lechem, with Shtei HaLechem. Regarding Shavuos, if we look forward in the Pesukim, you will see in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, Nechaf, the Kohen takes the Lechem, which is also called Bikurim, and waves it around, also offers other karbanos. And look at Pasuk Chavala, V'korasam be'etzem hayom hazeh, on the essence of this day, you call Mikra Kodesh, kol melechas avodah lo sasu. So we see, we have be'etzem hayom hazeh in regard to the day the Omer is brought, and the counting begins, first day of harvesting, second day of harvesting, third day of harvesting, leading up to Karban Shtei Alechem, where you came, would start coming to the Beis HaMikdash with your Bikurim. And then on that day where you offered Shtei Alechem was Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. And in the entire discussion of all the Chagim included in Emor, not only Shalosh Regalim, but also Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, there's only one more time from all the Chagim where Etzem Hayom Hazeh is mentioned. And that is, if you look forward, in Pasuk Chaf Ches, it is not mentioned in regard to Sukkot, it is not mentioned in regard to Rosh Hashanah. However, in regard to, and it is not mentioned in regard to Pesach, regarding the mitzvah of the day, but in regard to Yom Kippur, it is again mentioned. In Pasuk Chaf Ches, V'chol malacha lo sasu be'etzem hayom hazeh ki yom kippurim hu, v'chaper aleichem. So we have three times where the Torah adds the word Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh, and obviously these Yom Tovim are related. These Yom Tovim are related, and our question is, in what way the day of the Omer, Shavuos, and Yom Kippur? But we have another question. If we start thinking, and we think to ourselves, well, we can come up with a reason that Be'etzem is mentioned on these three days, because we do have a link between the first day of the Omer, which is just the beginning of a process leading to Shavuos, and Yom Kippur. It's not that much of a stretch to realize that the three are connected, because they're all three associated with Matan Torah. The counting up to Shavuos. Shavuos is the first Luchos, and Yom Kippur is clearly the second Luchos. So now that leads us to our next question, which is, true, Shavuos is Zman Matan Torah Seinu, but there's no mention anywhere about that in the discussion of Shavuos. Not anywhere in the Torah does it relate Shavuos to Zman Matan Torah Seinu. Now we know this. We know it. We know that it's always been associated, but the question is, wherein lies the association between the Korban Shtei HaLechem and Matan Torah, linking both Yom Kippur and the beginning of Sfiras HaOmer, which of course are part of the giving of the Torah process, all designated with the name, with the word Etzem, Etzem Hayom. Where is the association? Can we find a link between the Shtei HaLechem and Shavuos? Offering of two challah bread, two loaves of bread, initiating the Bikurim cycle, and Shavuos, which is the time of the giving in the Torah. So here in Emor, Rashi doesn't say anything about the Shtei HaLechem and any relationship that it might have to Matan Torah. However, in the discussion of why we bring Shtei HaLechem, on Shavuos, which is called Atzeres, and this is in Gemara Rosh Hashanah, Tezayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara answers it, gives you a clear reason for why we bring Shnei Lechem. Doesn't link it directly to Matan Torah, but here's the reason of the Gemara. It says, Mipnei ma amra Torah heviyu shtei alechem be'atzeres. For what reason does the Torah tell us to bring two loaves of bread on Shavuos? Mipnei sha'atzeres zman peros ha'ilan hu. Because atzeres is the time of the fruit. The big fruits begin to ripen, Shavuos, time in Eretz Yisrael. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so God says, heviyu lefanai shtei alechem. Bring before me in the Beis Hamikdash two loaves of bread, ba'atzeres, kedei sheyisbarchu lachem peiros ha'ilan, so that the fruits of the trees should be blessed. Question: why? How does chita, which is made into bread, have any connection to the fruits of the trees? If we want the fruits of the trees to be blessed from Shavuos onwards, let's bring bikurim. On Shavuos, let that be the korban that we offer in the Beis HaMikdash on Shavuos. Where does bread come in? So Rashi answers, Shtei Alechem. Yirtzu al peiros ha'ilan. First, he gives two answers. First one is they will be considered a blessing for the peiros ha'ilan. Shei matirin lahavi bikurim. Once you give the Shtei Alechem, now you can bring bikurim. She'ein mevi'im bikurim kodem le'atzeres. You don't bring bikurim before Shavuos. And then he quotes, Bikure Ketzir Chitim, that as we've seen, the Ketzir Chitim, the harvest of wheat, is called Bikurim, as we just saw in Apsukim, that it's called Bikurim. So since the fruit are Bikurim and the harvest of wheat is called Bikurim, one is accepts the other, and when you bring the wheat, you can bring the Bikurim. But obviously Rashi is not satisfied with this answer, because that just begs the question, why don't we just bring Bikurim in fruit? That will bring a bracha on the fruit, on the Bikurim of the fruit. So Rashi suggests something else. Ani Shamati de Rabbi Yehuda, Ratamoy says, the Ha'azla Kamanda Amar B'Sanhedrin, he brings a other reference, Eitz She'achal Adam Harishon Chita Haisa. The tree that he ate from was chita. Now we know, we're immediately getting into a whole other area that takes thinking about. In other words, if the tree, if the Eitz Hadas, if the fruit of the tree that enticed her and seduced her, and whatever it was that made her eat from the Eitz Hadas, we know that she ate from something growing off a tree. We know that she ate from a fruit. And Rashi brings here that chita was the Eitz Hadas, which means to say that there was a time where chita was a fruit, where wheat was a fruit. The Eitz Hadas, if the Eitz Hadas was wheat, then wheat was a fruit. Now the difference between a fruit today and wheat or other grains is that wheat must be planted yearly. It's not a fruit. It doesn't grow automatically year by year. It doesn't have a trunk that remains from year to year and branches and just the wheat grows off of it. It is planted on a yearly basis. The difference between a fruit and a grain or a vegetable is that the fruit is the produce of a ever-standing tree, could live for 50, 60, 70 years or more, whereas a grain or vegetables must be cultivated, planted on a yearly basis. Which can explain the curse, Bezea sapecha tocha lechem. By the sweat of your brow, you will now eat bread, because bread was a peri, a fruit, which means readily accessible, perhaps not bread, but wheat, the wheat grains. And now you will have to sweat to bring out the lechem that was really before the sin, when it was part of a tree, an automatic type of a thing. But when we say that chita was a fruit, we are getting into a whole deep philosophical area. What defines a fruit is that it doesn't just have a peri, what defines a tree, a fruit tree, it doesn't just produce a peri, it has a trunk. This is called a keren. This is an important word, keren. Right? Elo advarim asher adam ochel peroseim ba'olam hazeh, va'keren kayemes la'olam haba. Here are things that the person eats, benefits from their fruit, so to speak, their produce here in this world, enjoys it here. But notwithstanding the fact that they're enjoying the fruits of these mitzvos here, the keren kayemes lahem la'olam haba, there remains for them eternally the basis, the core, the trunk. They haven't depleted anything by enjoying the fruits of the benefits of the mitzvahs here. They still, the schar, which is called keren kayemes, is still completely, remains for them in the next world. Nothing has been depleted. We know that the beauty of a fruit tree is you take the fruit and you do not deplete the source. Originally, chita, which is the staff of life, man's basic staple, was a fruit where you ate from the fruit, but you never depleted the source. Now, in the lashon, in the terminology of the Gemara, when a source is ever standing and not able to be depleted, the way this is called in Gemara terminology is lo mechalya karna. The karna is the keren. Mechalya means it doesn't finish, is not destroyed, it's not depleted, it's not damaged. Lo mechalya karna. The source, the shoresh, is not depleted. When we talk about chita being a fruit, we mean that man's sustenance was like the chita that man ate. And as we know, man was meant to be eternal. Death was a outcome, an outgrowth of the curse itself, not immediate death, but death that man would experience, which we spoke about 2 weeks ago, which is part of the Eitzev Tel Dibanim. Remember this? Certain sadness accompanying childbirth, because other than it being a pure pleasure and godlike act, we talked about the idea that now it is a necessary way to replace ourselves, and there's a certain atzva, sadness associated with that because there is death in the world. So man himself was meant to be eternal. And so was what he ate, was eternal. It was also a fruit you ate, but as we said, lo mechalya karna, but never depleting the source of it. Now we know that there's nothing left like that in the world, except the next world is an ever ongoing life and existence. It's not here. Everything here erodes. And we know that the Torah is something nitzchius and eternal that lives through us. We activate it through us, we express it, it lives beyond us, and as long as we're attached to it, this is the only thing that gives a person eternity. Now, what is the Torah called? Eitz Chaim Hi. It's a living tree. We say, Chaye Olam Nata Besocheinu, eternal life you planted within us. The Torah is compared to that tree, that trunk that produces fruit but is never depleted. Man ki adam hu eitz hasadeh. There is a lot of mishalom about man's similarity to the tree, the trunk of the tree that exists and does not erode despite the fact that it produces and people take from what it produces. But the essence, the core, the shoresh, is always there, is eternal. But after the chait, we lost this. We became finite. Everything around us is finite. And the staple, our basic staple of existence, chita, became something that also no longer was infinite. It was something that was depleted on a regular basis and needed to be planted again and again on a regular basis. It represents the change in man. The fact that chita was a fruit and now chita is a grain that needs to be replanted represents for us the change that took place in man, going from something that was connected to eternity to something that is not, that is finite. At the same time, here in this world, we are attempting to reconnect to that infinite possibility. We have a very hard time accepting the fact that we erode and that we, as we speak, and we We will eventually go back to the dirt that we came from as organic matter, which is what we are made up of. This bothers us, okay? So there is a great drive in the soul and the heart of man to achieve some type of eternity for oneself. We know here on this earth, the best we can hope for is what we call arichas yamim, many long days. But even arichas yamim comes to an end. The many days, in fact, I just saw a lady in some Spanish country just celebrated her 128th birthday. Did you see that? In any case, we here hope for arichas yamim, long days. But even long days come to an end. The difference between this world and the next world is that here we have arichas yamim, but the eternity in the next world is described as yom shekulo aruch. It's an entirely different nature of things. A day that is entirely long. Not many days, one unending constant day that is entirely long, that never ends. Here, when somebody passes from this world, we cry. And when people give speeches at make hespedim and eulogize a person, they generally end, "Umach Hashem dima me'akol panim," may Hashem erase tears off all faces. And Chazal tell us there, in regard to that pasuk, "Afilu demos shel simcha," even tears of joy. And people wonder why. Are tears of joy also destined to be erased? Perhaps they at least represent some overflow of happiness that we can't even speak. It just comes out in tears. We need the tears of joy. Rav Hirsch suggests that tears of joy have a different source. They're tears of sadness at moments of joy. Rav Hirsch explains in another place that the avel is spelled, as we know, Aleph, Beis, Lamed, Avel, and we have a very similar word, aval, but. Everybody lives at this moment with their reality, and perhaps right now I have my health, and I have my children, I have my parnasa, and I'm blessed. Aval, but, I have no way to know what comes down the road in 30 seconds. Everybody exists with a great aval, a great uncertainty of the next moment. The avel is someone who just turned the corner, but we're all there. It's not a huge difference than the vulnerability that we all live in, the uncertainty. The reason people cry when they're happy seems to be is because we know at that moment of joy, for whatever the joy is, we cannot hold on to it. We cannot protect it. We cannot ensure that it will always stay as it is, even for one more minute. And therefore, there are tears of happiness at the moment that we are so happy. There are tears. Perhaps he suggests that it is because we sense it slips through our fingers. Similar to the idea he described that we spoke about that sadness, this is actually not Hirsch, that the sadness of childbirth is partially mingled with knowing that it is a reality, a necessity, because of the fact that we can't be here forever. So we know that the present moment for us is fleeting. In fact, if we think about it, despite the fact that in psychology people often use the phrase live in the present, that in reality there's no such thing. The present does not exist. As you hear the words that I am speaking, as your brain processes them, they already happened. They're already in the past, a half a second ago, a quarter of a second ago. They're gone. Time is marching on. We have a future, things yet to happen. And we have a past, things that have happened, but we have no present tense at all. We cannot hold on to anything. The difference between this world and the next world, which is Yom Shekulo Aruch, a day that is entirely long, is that the next world is called Hove, Havaya. It is only present tense. Every moment in the next world is an everlasting moment that never goes away and never changes. Every moment in the next world is a constant moment. Nitzchius, eternity. Netzach should be translated as constant, unending, and unchanging. The Olam Haba, the future world, the reward, the return to our Kadosh Baruch Hu that we've spoken about, the reunion, the calm and the serenity and all the answers, the return of ourselves to our source, and the pleasure and satisfaction we will derive from feeling proud of ourselves that we used our moments correctly, is an unending moment. It's yom, it's a day, shekulo aruch, that is entirely long. That is a huge difference from arichos yamim, long, many days. So what we have here is we have a world that we live in, which is machalya karne, which in this world we erode. Our physicality does erode. But we have a world that's lo machalya karne, that there is no erosion in that world. Is it an eternal world? Now the question is, how do we hold on to the eternal world? We're here, everything erodes. Our fruit, our staple of life, our chita, is now a grain that has to be harvested on a regular basis. Bezeah sapecha tochal lechem. No longer at our demand, ready for us. And yet we have a keren kayemis. We have a keren kayemis in the next world, a eternity waiting for us that never ends in the next world. The question is to have a connection between us here and the Keren, the potential Keren Kayemis, everlasting core structure, trunk, you might say, that exists forever. So we've said this before, but it's in explanation of this idea. As we see each other here, and we recognize each other by our physical features, sometimes you can just see a person from the back, and you already recognize them by the way they stand, by the shape of their body, just the way they carry themselves. You don't even actually have to see the person. But certainly when you see a person here, we recognize each other because of our physical features. So too, in the next world, one neshama will recognize each other, in another neshama, immediately, by its features. Also, neshamas have features. But the features of a neshama are the understanding, the Torah the person learned, the search in the person's soul for truth, the effort they put in to do, the effort they exerted not to do something, all of those spiritual features, the mitzvahs they've done, how they hope to do mitzvahs, the tshuva they've done, whatever makes up our spiritual personality, which exists beyond us, that will be clearly known and seen as us. And one neshama will instantly recognize the other neshama for its true identity, for their spiritual features and character traits. So everything we do here, as we go through every single day, moment by moment, decision by decision, bracha by bracha, you know, conversation by conversation, action by action, whatever we spend our time here, we are at this moment building a parallel. I wouldn't call it a mirror image, but a clone, a spiritual parallel to ourselves that is in the world of Keren Kayemes La'olam Haba that exists forever. As developed as we are here, that's exactly who we are in this parallel world, which is the spiritual world, which is in another dimension. Do not be confused by the fact that we call it Olam Haba. It's not coming in the future. It's here. There are neshamas that we mentioned living in this world right now. We just don't see them. It's just another dimension. It's not in the future. It's now. It exists right here. It's all around us. And it is a world of Keren Kayemes, an everlasting world. And who we are in that world is who we make ourselves into using the abilities we have right here. Everything we do is building our features, our personality, who we are, how we will be seen and known and understood, recognized in the next world. So though here we have changed and we are finite and we go, we build here a Keren Kayemes, an everlasting existing Keren that never erodes in the next world. This brings us to Shavuos. Shavuos, we offer shtei halechem, two loaves of bread. The lechem is chita. Chita was a peri. It was a fruit. Everything changed. When we bring shtei alechem on the mizbeach on Shavuos, the idea is we are indicating that on this day, which we know is the day of the giving of the Torah, we have the opportunity through the Torah that is given on this day to connect to the eternal world, to chita, how it was before it was changed, and therefore it is chita, which is no longer a fruit, which is brought as the way, as the offering, so that we now initiate the bringing of all other fruits, bikurim, to the Beis HaMikdash. We remind ourselves by bringing chita that it was a fruit, and that man was eternal, and his staple of life was eternal. But now it's changed. But on this day of Shavuos, we can reconnect through the Torah given to that possible eternity for a person only through the mitzvahs of the Torah, only through that lifestyle. There's no other path, and no other path as direct and efficient in getting us there. There are paths that have some elements to truth to them. We can't deny that, but Torah is complete. And we don't have to, when we have the right thing, of course, we don't need to waste our time with side roads and things that do and don't get there, but have some similarity. So here we connect to the Torah on this day of the Shtei Alechem, and we remember the potential of man to create a Keren Kayemes, to live in a world lo machal yakarne, where the Keren does not erode as it was for Chita in the beginning. And now you'll see something striking. Remember the word Etzem? Go back to Pasuk Yadalid. This is the day we bring the Omer. The Omer, we said, is brought from barley because it was the first of the grains to ripen. The Omer, being brought the day after Pesach when we were released from slavery, not yet ready to receive the Torah, represents the beginning place of man, where man starts from. Barley, Hirsch explains, is really animal food. It's the last food of choice for humans to make bread from, to make cake from. It's considered animal food. It's on the lowest level. It's associated more with the gashmi, which is finite and death-bound. And therefore, the day after Pesach, on our path to the Shtei Alechem, we recognize our reality and we bring the Karban HaOmer from barley, that we are here, finite, human, similar to animals in many, many ways. And in fact, you can put an animal part in a human to give them a new heart or a new valve, right? We are beginning to use animal parts from pigs and different things. We're very similar. Our apparatus works the same in many ways. And so we bring the Karban HaOmer, which is barley. And then we start to count. That allows us to now start harvesting, and eventually, when we come to Shavuos, the chita, the wheat, which reminds us of our lost abilities, our lost reality, we are able, through the 49 days of counting towards this Shtei Alechem, to remind ourselves and build ourselves up to see ourselves as human beings who still can reconnect through the Torah itself to that original form of existence, which was an eternal existence, and eventually we offer the Shtei Alechem. And so on that day of bringing the Omer, when we start the process, self-development also, it's Etzem Hayom Hazeh. Look in Targum. Next in Unkelus, okay? Right next door. V'lechem uklei uperchan lo sechlun ad, what does it say? Bechran yoma. Ramban says Kran with a chaf and Karen with a kuf, it's the same thing. Bekeren yoma. He uses that word. Unkelus translates the word be'etzem, bekeren. Look again in Shavuos. Pasuk Chavalev, Ukurasem be'etzem hayom hazeh mikra kodesh. Look at Unkelis. What do you see? Be'etzem. Be'kran. Same word. The Keren. Etzem of Shavuos is Keren. The Etzem of the beginning of the Omer is Keren. And when you get to Yom Kippur, which we know is the second Luchos, Pasuk Chaf Ches, same thing, the Keren. Ramban notices that Unkelis translates Be'etzem Hayom as Be'keren Hayom. And he tries to work with this idea that there's a similarity, there's a connection between the Omer and Shavuos and Yom Kippur, all of them identified with Keren. He doesn't go into everything that we discussed, but he points out this association. What we're saying is that the relationship of the three are, these three are directly related to Keren Kayemes La'olam Haba. Not the other Yom Tovim. They are not directly related to Matan Torah or Kabbalah Satorah. These are the ones associated with Keren Kayemes La'olam Haba. We know that the Omer is related to Shavuos, not so much Pesach. It really has nothing to do with Pesach, which came before. It's the beginning of the process to Shavuos. In the Musaf Shmona Esrei of Pesach, we do not mention Karban HaOmer. It has nothing to do with Pesach. However, in the Musaf Shmona Esrei of Shavuos, we do mention the Karban Shtei Alechem. The Omer is associated with Shavuos, no question about it. It's a process of moving forward. There's an old question, and many, many answers are given. Why we don't start counting, you know, from 49, 48, 47, 46, 50, because counting backwards. One, we're here, we made it to Shavuos. If we were counting backwards, the only day of real significance is the day number one, right? One day left and then zero. That's the important day. Everything else is nothing. Everything else we just want to get through till we get to the last day. My son has a calendar in his room and counts off every day till the end of school. He's got it. He made it himself. 100 days, 99 days, 98 days, 97. The only day that matters is zero. All the rest are just, you know, to cross them out. That's the objective. It's exactly the opposite here. We are counting one day from the Omer, 2 days from the Omer, 3 days from the Omer. We are working towards the Shtei Halechem, which is a process. It takes a development. It's not an automatic thing. When we offer them the Shtei Halechem, they are called in Pasuk Tezayim, Mincha Chadasha LaHashem. A brand new offering. This is the chadash, the new grain that is now allowed to be used. But the offering is a mincha chadasha because the people recognize that through this offering, the shtei alechem, which reminds them of the chita, which was eternal, as they were eternal, and now they're not, but only the Torah gives them eternity. They also realize that there can be chadash, renewal. There can be a human being that is renewed and that is eternal and that does not die and doesn't become old and doesn't erode. It's a mincha chadasha, parallel, appropriate for people standing at the brink of you know, seeing in front of them a potential for also chidush, for new. And so we have here for Shavuos is the idea that it is what reconnects us, gives us a Keren Kayemes, an eternal, everlasting existence that we here right now are building that Keren Kayemes. And so when we are working towards Shavuos, we have some time to go. We have some time to go. This is what is meant to be in our minds, that we are not here hoping for, at best, as we said, arichas yamim. What we're really here for is building for ourselves a yom shekulo arach, a day that is keren kayemes olam haba. Everything exists, never erodes, a constant time. And as we know, as we said, Shavuos becomes the time that we have access to this.